Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Inyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. What a great tragedy in Binghamton, New York. Binghamton, New York. At least 12 people are dead, dozens injured, and a man went into a building that had services for immigrants and started shooting. He used his Toyota to block the back door. And he went in the front door and began murdering people. And, of course, we don't know the details, but the building was the American Civic Association. And there were people inside, for example, taking English classes, people who had wanted to become citizens. So then the murderer went on to kill himself. And there is, of course, an epidemic of murder-suicide. And Brian Rohrbaugh, Columbine dad, friend of this program, and the president of American Right to Life, was on CBS News, Evening News with Katie Couric, and he said to the nation, to 7 million people, that our nation has an epidemic of murder-suicide. And people think that they could commit crimes and get away with it by killing themselves. And is that a reasonable thought? Is that going to work out for them? For the murderers who then kill themselves? And so many people who have sexual immorality in their lives and they go on, let's say, to kill a wife. And then they kill their children. You've seen these kinds of murders. There's hundreds of them in America. And what they think is that they kill their wife, but they don't want their kids to have to live with the sadness of having their mother killed, so they kill their kids too. And then either they try to run away with the woman they're having an affair with, or they kill themselves. And they think that this resolves all the suffering. There'll be no more suffering. And of course, that's the result of the kind of godless thinking of a secular humanist, that this life is all there is and then that's it. But if you have a criminal and he's trying to figure out, well, who am I going to steal from in town and get away with it? And then it turns out that he stole a car from the judge, the only judge in town. And then he's caught. And then he's standing before the judge and he stole the judge's car. It's like you're not exactly a rocket scientist as a criminal, are you? Well, these people who commit murder, suicide, they end up not escaping any punishment, but rushing into judgment. They end up rushing into judgment. They are going to judgment day and they're rushing their way to it. It's like committing a crime and then running to the courthouse or running to the jail or running to the executioner thinking, oh, I'm going to get away with this. I'm going to hide in the police station. And so our godless society where millions of people are taught that they've evolved from slime, they're just animals. And then there are consequences. Ideas have consequences. And so then they think that, well, there's no afterlife. So I could commit these crimes and get away with it. You can't get away with it. This life, this is like being on the porch and then you go through the door and you enter the mansion. You enter the house that's going to be your permanent dwelling. So in this life, this is our physical life. We live here until we die and then we enter the afterlife. And so these people, because they don't have, and I'm not speaking of each person as an individual, but taken as a group. Taken as a group because there's a lack of understanding of the consequences that murderers will face, they think they can get away with it. And that idea comes to them from Darwinism. Darwinism, where the strong could kill the weak and there are no consequences. The strong could kill the weak and there are no consequences. And believe me, there are consequences. And people will stand before the judge of the whole earth, and he will be angry. Do we get that from the Old Testament or the New Testament? The New Testament says it is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of the living God. The phone number here at Bob and Yurt Live, 303-455-0777. Bob and Yurt Live, we've been moving our studio this week, and we're not sure whether or not we'll be able to broadcast from the new location on Monday, but it's a possibility. We hope so, but right now we're in the luxurious downtown Denver studios of KLTT, 50,000 watt AM 670 KLTT, the most powerful Christian radio station in America. And the call-in line, the talk line for this week is 303-455-0777, 303-455-0777. So this guy right now, the murderer, we have his name. He worked for IBM. His name is Jiverly Vong, V-O-O-N-G. Jiverly Vong, J-I-V-E-R-L-Y. And there's this gentleman who's just been pacing outside since the crime, and he doesn't know what's happened to his wife. And he tells the media, the only thing I know now is hope. I just hope. It's such a devastating, devastating situation. And when we find out more about the motives of this murderer, we may learn more, you know? We may learn more, but it'll be devastating regardless. 303-455-0777. Let's go to Denver. Doug, you're on Bob and Yurt Live. Hi, Doug.
Hello, Bob. It's great to hear you on the air. Always appreciate your spiritual, cultural, political worldview.
Thank you so much, Doug. Doug McBurney, by the way.
I wanted to, Bob, these murder-suicides that you just referenced, I haven't kept up with the news, but I just heard about what happened on your show here today, just right now. And where do you think the responsibility lies vis-a-vis the church, the government, the schools, and the family? Mm. Why is this happening, and can you address those four cultural institutions?
All right. Sure. Doug, thank you. When there's a crime epidemic, of course, every crime, the criminal's at fault. So the criminal is at fault for his crime. But a crime epidemic is not the fault of one criminal. A crime epidemic is the fault of the government. And just like poverty results from bad government and bad religion, those things will create poverty. A crime is a result of bad government, a crime epidemic. And our lawyers will tell us that we have the best system in the world, but the reality is we have the highest paid lawyers in the world.
Yeah, right? That's true.
But we have this horrendous a violent crime rate and murder rate, and what is it, 2 million Americans incarcerated at any given time in the country. So we have one of the worst systems in the world if you're results-oriented. If you're not results-oriented, you only care about what lawyers make. If lawyers make a lot of money, you say we have the best system in the world, then, yeah, America has the best system in the world. So the government is at fault because God reveals a criminal justice system in which his punishments for crimes are so equitable and so obvious and so good and so right that people could grow up in a society where they believe that justice exists. But people grow up in America and they think there is no justice. There's no justice. And so the consequences, Doug, are beyond what we could fathom. Even for this guy, he thinks he committed murder and then he's gotten away with it. He's gotten away with nothing. He has run right into the courtroom. Right now he's standing before the judge.
And Bob, that's what I appreciate about your show so much is that you remind us that there is an eternal perspective that we must consider. I don't know that it's the government's job to teach people about that. Am I wrong about that?
Well, the government should do everything, just as every human being and every human institution should do everything consistent with the will and the principles of God. So the government is not the church. It's not the government's primary function to preach the gospel. That's not the job. The job of the government is infrastructure and criminal justice. Criminal justice and the military. Protecting people from criminals and invading armies, for example. And that's it. Those are the two obligations that God has given to the government. Those are the two just functions of government. Infrastructure and criminal justice. So the government, if the government were to swiftly execute convicted murderers, people would believe that there is justice and even that there is a God of justice. When the government does not do that, people grow up thinking that there is no such thing as right and wrong because the law is the great teacher. So, Doug, I want to thank you, and we'll get to family in the church, too.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your call. That's Doug McBurney, who comes on the program quite often as a co-host. Our phone number here at Bob and Yurt Live, 303-455-0777, 303-455-0777. On the massacre in New York, Dave, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hey, Bob, did I just hear you say that the killing was the fault of the murderer?
The crime is the fault of the criminal.
But that's not true, because I was just checking Yahoo.com, and the headline read, Massacre Kills 12 in New York.
Massacre. You know how
it
often...
It just happened. It just, you know, yeah, it was just a massacre that caused it.
Quite often it's the gun that does it.
That's right.
Quite often it's the gun that does it. And, Dave, it's amazing also how often the media uses a passive voice instead of the active voice, so that you read the lead, and it seems like the murders just happened.
It just happened, Bob. It wasn't anybody's fault, was it?
Right, right. At least 12 people are dead. This is the number one story linked to by Drudge on this murder. At least 12 people are dead after a gunman went on a shooting spree. Like, you know, murderer kills 12 people. Murderer kills 12 people. That's the lead. That's the heading. But the media doesn't do that. And they don't ascribe guilt or responsibility. And, in fact, I don't think we should ascribe journalism to the reporters. We should refer to them as alleged journalists. These are alleged journalists who are creating these stories. Why would we assume that they're journalists? So, all right, Dave, I appreciate it.
And it makes you wonder why all these murder suicides are happening. It's because nobody's taking any responsibility.
Mm. Hey, Dave, how many talk shows will call him a murderer? Hopefully everyone.
But I think this is the only show that does.
Hmm. Well, hopefully there are many others, especially on this station. Hey, Dave. Hey, Dave, thank you so much for your call.
God bless.
Appreciate that. 303-455-0777. 303-455-0777. So suicide is inherently destabilizing in society. Suicide is inherently destabilizing. Suicide is wrong. Suicide is sinful. Suicide should not be approved of by National Right to Life and other groups that approve of suicide. Oh, wait. National Right to Life doesn't approve of suicide? I thought I remember them pushing for that Incapacitated Persons Legal Protection Act. Yeah, I remember that. I have a pretty good memory for these things. And that act, the Hemlock Society couldn't have gotten as far with that act as they did, but that act gave federal legal recognition to state suicide laws. And if somebody wants to be starved to death, then National Right to Life's legislation would be, I think, the first time in federal history that the federal government would acknowledge and recognize the suicide. So pardon me for blaming National Right to Life when they deserve to be blamed. See, they were operating under the hope that they were trying to protect and defend Terri Schiavo. They were trying to save her. But a nation where the Christian pro-life leaders will offer recognition of suicide laws is not a safe place for a handicapped person like Terri Schiavo. If our leaders don't understand principled matters, right and wrong, this is not going to be a safe country for the vulnerable. And you'll be vulnerable too at some point, right? You too. So suicide is inherently destabilizing. Kamikazes in Japan, it's destabilizing. People begin to revere the idea of killing yourself while you're trying to kill your enemy. And so the suicide bombers in Islam today, they elevate them. They revere them. They don't deify them, but it's they tell them, what do they say? You will get 70 virgins if you kill yourself while killing some Jewish women and children. Allah will give you 70 virgins. And so then we tried to figure out, remember our research team worked on this? We tried to figure out what the female suicide bombers would get. What do they get? Because there are a few female suicide bombers, and surely Allah is not a lesbian, not going to give the female suicide bombers 70 virgins. What would she do with them? So we figured out, we researched it, we looked into the Quran, we talked to the imams, we figured it out. What do the female suicide bombers get? They get to opt out of being one of the 70. They get to opt out. So they don't have to be given to some other loser who killed himself while killing some kids. So some of them actually kill themselves just so they don't have to be one of the 70. So suicide is inherently destabilizing. So whether it's a kamikaze in Japan, or whether it is a jihadist in the Gaza Strip or in Germany. Do you remember Germany had suicide bombers? You remember that? People don't remember that. That's a small part of World War II. But Germany trained men to pilot vessels that were not airplanes. They weren't ships. They were rockets. They were rockets that Germany produced. And they had to be piloted by a human being, and the human being would pilot his rocket into the target and be killed with the rocket. Now, the Germans ran out of time, partly because their wickedness helped them to be vulnerable to a more rapid defeat. So they were wicked on every conceivable level. Just imagine if the goal was to mitigate the wickedness of the Germans during the 30s and 40s, if the goal was, okay, you're killing Jews, but don't kill as many Jews and don't kill them in such painful ways. Kill them more humanely. Give them, you know, painkillers, anesthesia first. Give them an anesthetic and then kill them. Imagine if that was the effort. And if Christians tried to do that for 30 or 40 years, and imagine even worse than that, imagine if the Christians succeeded and they mitigated the wickedness of the Nazis. So the Nazis were not quite so wicked. And most likely, if you mitigate the wickedness of Planned Parenthood, I'm sorry, of the Nazis, then you'll enable them to endure for an extra year or decade or century. Maybe the Third Reich would still be here if its wickedness was mitigated and it didn't just expend itself and make itself vulnerable, because as wicked it wickedness tends to destroy from within. And so the abortion industry, the Christians in this country, have focused on, well, let's try to mitigate their wickedness. Let's try to make them look better. Let's try to make their killing of children more humane, more dignified, more palatable, less offensive to the public and to politicians and to judges. And so we do that for 30 years, and then we wonder why the government is being taken over by people who approve of Planned Parenthood and who hate Christians. It's like, well, we've been making Planned Parenthood look good for 30 years. For 30 years, National Right to Life and Michigan Right to Life and Jay Sekulow and ministry after ministry, they've been cleaning up Planned Parenthood's public image, making them look better. Make sure, hey, it's only responsible, right? If you're a juvenile, get your parents' consent, or at least talk to your parents. Notify your parents. Don't kill the babies when they're that old. You know how bad it looks? Or don't punch a hole in the back of their neck. Just give them a lethal injection. Nobody will see it. Don't kill the baby after he comes out of the womb. Born Alive Infant Protection Act. You're an abortionist. Make sure you kill the baby before he comes out. So we've been doing everything we could to make the abortion industry look better. And of course, our motives were, we're trying to save some, but we get confused because we're in this pragmatic battle where we have forgotten about principle. We forget about what God says is right and wrong, and we think every legislative victory and every political campaign, it's worth whatever we compromise on, it's worth it to get a victory. And so our nation begins to fall apart because our Christian leaders don't even know right from wrong anymore. They don't know right from wrong. And suicide is inherently destabilizing, but who would have thunk it? Who would have thunk it that National Right to Life would introduce legislation and lobby for legislation where the federal government would recognize for the first time state-assisted suicide laws? And that's what they did. They said, if someone asks to be starved to death, then the federal government will recognize that. But in Terri Schiavo's case, there is no written record of her being starved to death, so therefore, they should give her food and water. Now, of course, National Right to Life should have fought for Terri Schiavo to be given food and water, because it's murder to starve someone to death. To intentionally starve someone to death is murder. And so, of course, they should have fought for that. But they are so broken and immoral and godless in their entire strategy that they didn't realize that they introduced the first federal law to recognize state-assisted suicide laws and to affirm, well, if someone has a written directive that they want to commit suicide, then we, the federal government, at the council and advice of National Right to Life, we recognize that. And so Christians don't understand why suicide is wrong. Christian leaders, pro-life, do you know how many pro-life leaders said while we were fighting to save Terri Schiavo, we being Colorado Right to Life, sent people down to Florida. Members of my church, Denver Bible Church, sent people down to Florida to save Terri Schiavo's life, to try. And we had pro-life leaders, talk show hosts. Some of them I don't even want to name because it's so shocking and devastating. And said, well, you know, the problem is she didn't have a written directive. What? What? That was the problem? And you have Hugh Hewitt and Dennis Prager and Michael Medved, all three Salem radio hosts, all on the same afternoon talk show, all together, all three, talking about Terri Schiavo. And you know what they said? They said, well, the issue really is she didn't have a written directive. If she had a written directive, then it should be legal assisted suicide, starve her to death. And then Michael Medved asked Dennis Prager and Hugh Hewitt. He asked, well, do we all agree? And they were sort of in shock that they're all agreeing. Said, you know, we've not really talked this through, but yeah, we all agree right here on the air live. We suppose pro-family, suppose pro-life, suppose Republican, suppose, oh no, they are Republican, suppose conservative leaders, we all think that you should be able to kill yourself if you're handicapped. And then Michael Medved asked, was it Dennis Prager? So, well, Dennis, what if Terry Schiavo, she's severely handicapped, what if the person's a quadriplegic? Do you think they should have the right to kill themselves? And Dennis Prager said, wow, you know, I haven't thought through that, and it feels weird just answering right on the spur of the moment on the air. But, yeah, I think so. I think a quadriplegic should have the right to kill herself. And then how about what if it's a paraplegic? What if it's somebody who's just depressed? What if it's a 13-year-old girl and her boyfriend just started dating her best friend? That's the greatest pain in the world. There is no greater pain than that. Liberals say we need suicide as a way for people to deal with pain. They are creeps. Those liberals are creeps. Because a 13-year-old girl experiences the worst pain in the world. First of all, she shouldn't be dating. And she's not ready emotionally to get into a relationship like that. In and out of relationships, dating for teenagers is a disaster. But for her boyfriend to start dating her best friend, she is experiencing the greatest pain known in the world. And if the adults in the media, in her music, they glorify suicide as a way for dealing with pain, and she realizes nobody in the world has more pain than I do, and she kills herself. And that's a consequence of society promoting suicide. And our society promotes suicide. And Denver's Children's Hospital recommended, they counseled the parents of Dylan Walborn to kill him, to starve him to death. DylanWalborn.com. The Denver Post documented, was it 3 weeks? Over a period of 3 weeks, Dylan Walborn was starved to death at the council, at the recommendation of Denver's Children's Hospital. That's what Denver's Children's Hospital will do to a handicapped child. They will starve him to death, assisted suicide. And it's not even suicide. It's not even his own. This is now secondhand suicide. They're killing somebody else. And that's the slippery slope that those who know right from wrong talk about. First, they say you have the right to kill yourself. Then they say you have the right to kill someone else who's incompetent to make the decision for themselves. And the next tier is you have the right to kill others who don't want to be euthanized, but you know that they're better off dead. That's why people in Northern European countries where suicide is so popular, they're afraid they're going to be killed by their doctor. They're afraid of it. And that's here, too, in this country. It's happening. Go to the nursing homes. Go to the hospital. Hey, we're out of time. Maranatha Christian Center in Arvada, what a great school. And our website is kgov, kgov.com. May God bless you.